6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding.
Reality.
Okay, well, here we are welcoming it to the show at Channing Hooper and Stuart Mack, joined by my lovely wife here as well in studio, because that's how I know these fine folks. So all the ways to find them, of course, guys, going to be located down below in the show description, as well as the way to support your favorite show and join us for the afterthought. We're going to have a little bonus content here. We're really going to go for it, and I'm excited about it.
Oh, yeah.
So just wanted to welcome everybody here and let everybody know, again, all the ways to find them down in the show description. Channing, Stuart, how are you guys today?
Great.
Good. Yeah.
Cool. Great. So you have a bunch of gear behind you, as I would say, and sound panels and stuff like that. Why do you have so much music equipment behind you? What's going on there?
Well, we're both musicians, and we try to be as quiet as possible, but it's not that easy because Stuart plays trumpet, which is very loud.
Hey, the violin's pretty loud
too. Well, there's like, you know, 30 violins or so in an orchestra and like 4 trumpets maybe. But all the panels on the wall are to just dampen the sound as much as possible.
Yeah, you two are incredible musicians, and we're going to get into your story. If you don't mind, though, let's just hear just a little bit more about who you two are individually. So, Channing, if you don't mind, I was raised well. We'll allow the lady to go first. So tell us just a little bit more about you.
Well, I'm from Texas. That's where I met Mary. We worked at Starbucks together. I was in high school, and Mary was very nice to me being so young and not knowing what I was doing for anything. I think I learned how to sweep a floor properly working at Starbucks. So that's about where I was at. I started violin at the age of 4, and I didn't really start taking it seriously until high school. Unlike most professional string players that I know, they all knew before that time that that's kind of what they wanted to do. So I did a lot of catching up in high school with my studying. And then I went on to the University of North Texas for my undergrad degree in violin performance. Stuart also went to school there, but that's not how we met. And then I moved to the New York area, or Queens, in 2019. And then
Before COVID.
Yeah, just before COVID. And I've been here since then, just playing violin and
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah, so we're going to get into a gigging in a big city. Looks like modern gigging, you know, because I was a, I guess, touring musician for about 12 years, but it was a long time ago. It was about 18 years ago for me. So it was a while, and I've been out of the music scene for a little bit, getting back into it. Very excited about that. So I'm looking forward to some mentorship on your end as well. Stuart, a little more about you, brother.
Yeah, so I'm from Illinois originally, town called Washington, Illinois. Very small town, small area. And I moved to Texas. Well, I guess before that, I started playing trumpet when I was 12 or so. Realized I wanted to be a professional musician when I was like 16, probably around the same age Channing was. And moved to Texas, went to school there. And
Then you moved to New York?
Yeah, then I moved to New York. And I've been in New York since 2016, so coming up on 9 years, which is very strange, but yeah.
So what's I want to know what it's like from Texas to New York. How did that change go?
Yeah. For Channing, I feel like it was terrible timing because she moved. Like she was starting to place a lot of gigs and everything, and she was gaining a lot of traction. And then like, what was it like 4 months later? Then everything shut down.
Yeah. Just one by one, both of us started getting texts saying our gigs were canceled before the actual shutdown happened.
Yeah, it's terrible timing.
Yeah, like all musicians, we were kind of wondering like how long we were going to go without literally any work.
Yeah,
yeah, like this is a couple weeks, right, to flatten the curve, and then we'll be back.
Yeah,
exactly.
And New York rent is really expensive, so that was not fun.
You guys weren't resorting to finding new rat recipes though, right?
Not quite.
Okay, good.
She did have a chicken tortilla soup recipe that she was making.
I could have subbed really rat in if I needed to.
Yeah. But didn't need to, thankfully. That's good. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. So you both ended up at UNT. How did you two meet?
We met because I was playing a gig and Stuart was also playing the gig, but he was only playing three songs of it and he was the trumpet soloist. And I was like, oh, he sounds really good. So I started following him on Instagram. And then a year later, he had moved to New York and I was still in Texas, but he posted, he started posting stories from Haiti. He was there with a Haitian band. And I have a cousin who lives in Haiti. I feel like that's a pretty random place where a lot of people don't necessarily go from the U.S. So I messaged him being like, well, what are you doing in Haiti? Like, my cousin lives there. And then we just started talking from there. And then I came up here and then I moved here and then that's it.
Yeah. Aww, that's so cute. So y'all met at a gig.
Yeah, after we both graduated, because the UNT Music School is so big and he was in the jazz program and I was in the classical program and we didn't overlap that much.
Yeah. Yeah, the two sides are very separate. It's weird.
Like East Coast, West Coast shit, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, it's very much like that. And I met a French horn. I did my master's degree in New York. Oh, sorry, this is... There we go.
Okay. That's okay. This is on the fly. This is conscientious, Stuart. Thank you. That's okay.
I did my master's degree at Manhattan School of Music and I met this French horn player and we were talking and she was like, oh yeah, I went to a school in Texas. And I was like, wait, where? It found out that we were at North Texas the same time and we'd never seen each other before.
Oh my gosh.
And of course it's a French hornist. You know me in French horn.
Yeah,
I'm
he's
a
obsessed
sucker
with French
for
horn.
French horn. I had like as a child, like as a wee child, way too small to appreciate this shit. I had the classical, the Jurassic Park soundtrack, but it was all classical music and everything. And I just love the French horns. I named all my hamsters as kids after composers. Like I'm a huge nerd. All right. From the get, but it's beautiful to hear though, the synchronicities, how everything was tied together in these intricate ways for you to ping Channing, for you to get more comfortable with the Haitian tie, with the trumpet. He obviously wooed you with his sweet brass sound. He's got sweet brass.
That's right.
And it's cool, too, because you guys are kind of merging the orchestra anyway, because there is beef between sections. You know, it's wild. Why can't everybody get along? Like the Bigfoot UFO people, like everybody just get along, right? Brass and strings, woodwinds, let's all just hang out. Yeah. Percussion can fuck off. Drummers, we get it. We get it. Yeah. But other than that, right, you know?
Yeah.
but no, that's a beautiful story. So how did you know that you were both going to be together for a long amount of time? Because that's very different than meeting. You know, was there a moment? Was there an instance? Or was this just sort of a slow boil to where you're just like, okay, well, I guess we're fucking together forever now?
Was it love at first sight at that gig? Or was it just kind of like, oh, he's cool?
No, I mean, we didn't really interact at that gig.
He's like, yeah, I want to know, actually. Let's get into it. Yeah.
No, I think after we just started talking, we just got along really well and had no issues. And everything.
Always a good sign.
I love it. She's like, it just wasn't shitty. She didn't suck that much. So we just kind of kept it going.
Hey, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
No issues is a great thing.
Well, I like the simplicity in the metric because I think a lot of people have ridiculous standards that then get obviously overwhelmed by impossibility. You were just like, doesn't suck. What? How great. That's amazing.
Well, it's probably a little better than just doesn't suck.
Of course.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But your baseline, cherry on top, everything else.
Exactly.
He's a handsome fella. Yeah. Plus doesn't suck.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's all, right? Everything, like, comma, is a bonus.
Win-win, you know?
All of it. Do you guys have, like, little trumpet sounds that play throughout your house whenever, do you sub those out for little notifications or doorbells or anything like that? Or a little string concerto, a riff or anything?
That sounds terrible.
I think I hear that trumpet. Yeah.
Maybe a French horn. You sub it out for something else. You know?
Kenny's like, I'm tired of the trumpet.
No, we don't. It's just
regular ring tones. I'm tired of the trumpet. Yeah. Well, I had a kind of an awkward run in the lobby. I was talking to the our doorman, and he was like, "Oh yeah, this is such and such. He's actually your lower neighbor."
We've been here for 3 years, and we've never met this person.
Yeah.
Sort of on purpose.
Well,
I mean, we didn't like seek them out, but you know, and they've never like left us notes about noise or anything. So we just like hoped we were okay.
Yeah.
And but you guys aren't beginner musicians. It's not like you're learning up there. You're, you know, and Stuart, we're going to get into the Grammy that you just won and Channing, you guys have been gigging professionally for decades. So it's not like you're shit musicians. You know, I mean, people would probably be like, can we get the room next to him? Actually, this is great.
Well, the sounds of a musician performing are very different from a musician practicing. Yeah.
Sure, I know this. I tell her.
Even at a professional level.
Yeah, and I was just like, how's the trumpet? And he was like, I can tell you're getting better.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Carrying your Grammy around. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm just taking this out for a walk. Yeah. I'm getting better. That's great. Well, okay, so what is gigging like today? Because I'm curious about catch me up on the scene. You know, I was used to just kind of going around. There was availability in gigs, and I did find that bigger cities were a little bit easier to navigate because there's more availability. There's also a lot more, if you want to call it that, competition, right? Now, I always saw that as an opportunity to gig with a new musician. And because like you guys, I did singer-songwriter acoustic stuff with that guitar back there. I wrote a bunch of music, but I had a cello player, a violinist. We had an incredible guitar and percussionist. We had keys. We had all of that, but with, you know, acoustic, rock, folk, blues music, right? So I appreciate all of the nuances that can be brought with the different styles, but plus also being a self-taught musician, inviting theory musicians in was very interesting. So first of all, let's start there. What is gigging like today? What's it
especially
like getting out there? Yeah.
Me to start? You probably have...
Sure.
Okay. So when I was in school for music, the emphasis was mostly on getting ready for orchestra auditions and like just very classical music things, more serious music. Never, ever talked about pop music at all. Like it was like, why would you talk about that? That's trash, basically, you know. But after I graduated, I mean, most of the gigs for a freelance musician, which is what I am because I'm not playing in a major symphony full time or anything like that, it's mostly like weddings and private events. Sometimes you might play with some bands. So you kind of have to be able to pick up a lot of different styles and genres of music, and you have to know what they sound like. So you have to know what exists outside of the classical realm, which I wish I realized a little earlier, but I have realized it now for sure. So
it's
I try to keep up with the top 100 hits, even if I think they all suck, because that's what I'm playing a lot of the times. A lot of things like that. And now lately, electric violin is becoming really popular, like solo electric violin with backing tracks, which I've done a few times, or like playing with a DJ, which sometimes has its, like, everything kind of has its own learning curve. Sometimes the DJ doesn't change. There's like a way where the DJ can like make sure that the song stays in a key, even if they're changing the tempo of it. But sometimes they don't do that, and you're playing with the DJ and you're not in a key, and you have to just like adjust on the spot and figure out where the notes are on your instrument all of a sudden. And that's just a small example of like one type of gig where you have to adjust to. But yeah, it's just kind of like, you're always like on guard for like what is going to come at you.
Yeah.
You never know. It's all different. It's not what I was learning in school. That's for sure.
That's the beauty in the multidisciplinarian, right? You got the guy who just does this as a DJ on the weekend, has no sit down and do this for this many hours regimented in a classical traditional style of study. And he just kind of throws this thing up on the weekend, doesn't maybe think about key. Did you, though, let him know about key and say, hey, you know, you can actually, whenever you're playing with an instrument that's a fixed key, you may as well go ahead and adjust that. Was that a teachable moment for you, for him? Did you let him know?
It's too chaotic to kind of stop and
well, not in the see, middle. I mean, like, you know, in the back after you guys are having a snack or something. You're like, hey, buddy, by the way, this is a fixed instrument. You know, well, just letting you know about music.
I'm getting out of there as fast as possible. When the gig is
on. Give me my money and I'll, yeah.
Yeah, that can be the next person's issue.
Yeah. Well, and as you were talking about this, I was thinking in King of the Hill, remember when Con Jr., the little girl next door, she's playing violin, classically trained. Her parents are very rigid in study. And then she hears them jamming next door, the Hank and the Bunch, and they're playing bluegrass. And she goes over there, and now that violin is a fiddle. And they then go to Nashville and all this, and now she's barefoot with a straw hat on and doing that, and her dad's furious. Like, that I see for you. It's never too late for you to be this barefoot, you know, straw hat, little, you know, swap that violin for a fiddle. It's just a name change, right?
Yeah.
If someone wants to pay me, then I will do that.
It's like a whole different thing, right? To play fiddle.
Oh, yeah. If you're a serious fiddle player, it's a different style of, definitely a different style of a bow hold. And yeah.
Have you ever tried it?
Not in a serious way.
Right.
I've played like fiddle music, but I'm not like a fiddle player. I know great fiddle players, and it's just way different. I mean, it's something that I would have to really study hard. Yeah. Like if
Charlie
I were
Charlie Daniels on repeat.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's not that playing the notes of fiddle music is difficult, but it's the whole like feel and style and, just the musicality of it. It would be like if I tried to switch full-time over to jazz. There's just like a lot of tiny little details that you have to think about, and yeah, it's just like a different world.
It's a totally different thing. And Stuart, that was kind of where I was going to go with you, man, is because you doing different styles as well. I mean, you go from an orchestra type setup or any number of different varieties of gigs that you've got to, let's say, a jazz setup. And, you know, jazz, I mean, I know the motto is it's not when there's no more to add, it's when there's no more to take away. So you're kind of just sitting there like, dude, I'm doing my best. If I don't play a damn note, you guys are like crushing it. You know, you play one little squeak, you're like, I got this, you know, that's jazz. Yeah, so how do you feel about that? Because it is a different mindset that you're switching into constantly, but behind the same instrument. I mean, you've got to view it differently. How does that work for you?
It is different. I feel like a lot of it comes from the warm up and like the mindset I'm getting into when I pick up the horn for the day, because it's just very different. Like, especially I'd say the biggest difference for me in the styles I play would be like, say I'm playing more like a jazz soloist kind of chair compared to playing like a lead trumpet thing. So lead trumpet, that's where you're playing all the high notes. You're playing with like a very laser beamy sound. That's the sound that all of the neighbors in the apartment complex hate because it's very loud and very pointed.
It's really loud.
Yeah. But, you know, for like these gig situations, if you're playing with like 8 horn players, the lead trumpet, that's the lead voice and you need to cut through. So playing like that compared to like playing with the jazz trumpet sound where it's more rounded, sound that wouldn't cut through those 8 horn players. Like it's a very different approach, just on the instrument and not even thinking about like the stylistic changes that I make. But I think a lot of it is just doing each one a million billion times and then just being able to switch as you go from one thing to the other. It's like just very minute changes, I guess. I don't even know if I could say anything like specific.
Well, it's so interesting because what you just described is what people have described on the show as a certain manifestation. This is a technique of all the sports greats of you sit there and you visualize you walking through the motions, doing it, getting in the mindset of that person. Great car drivers do this. Remember in friggin' Cool Runnings, they're sitting there in the bathtub going through the turns, man. You're visualizing your process, right? You know every nuance about what you're embodying and you get into that character like a great actor or something. You know, you're method trumpeting and it's dope.
Method trumpeting.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. But the whole gigging thing is so interesting. Man, I'm sorry for my ignorance. I had no idea you were a touring musician.
No, well, I don't talk about it much, man. And it was a long, honestly, it's a chapter that closed for about 10 years that I'm just now picking back up. I just got this guitar behind my beautiful blushing bride here. This got sent to me and it's a really cool story. I'll tell you in the afterthought. This isn't about me, but I just restrung the guitar. We did an open around the campfire thing the other night. I played like 5 songs live. I'm writing music again, which is huge. Awesome. And so it brought me back like a warm, and it's just awesome. So yes. Yeah. It's really cool. And I'd love, you know, to have you guys join, cause we know musicians of all types from all over the world too. We do a Frequency Theorist, a monthly get together. We actually have it very soon here. I'll send you the link. And we all just get together from all over the world and we're looking to do sort of an internet project where we like, I'll send you guys some stuff with a click and then you submit, you know, your parts and then we put something together as an arrangement and cite all of you and just do this for fun. Right. So we're calling all musicians here because I noticed in a lot of the interviews over the past 4 years of doing this, no matter what people were talking about, I'd see a guitar in the back or I'd see, you know, a harp or some shit. I'm like, what is
There's
that? You know,
right,
exactly. Yeah. 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 Hidden amongst, you know, all the other music shit. Like, it's not all the other music stuff. And so I just noticed this theme, no matter who I was talking to, creativity, imagination, music was a big part of this. And so it's just something I'm like, yeah. And it's a huge part of me as well. Like I said, I was for a long time, I toured China all over the US and then came back to take care of my grandmother. And that's kind of what put the guitar in the case was a family member needed me. And I came up here to take care of her when she got Alzheimer's. And then I met Mary after she passed and I got a job. And so, you know, just 10 years goes by. Right. And there you go. Yeah. But the guitar has always been there and she's perfect. And she welcomed me back. So, yeah, music's back with a bullet, man, honestly. But it's super new, so no worries. Like when you were hanging out with us, when you guys came up here to the ranch, I wasn't playing. I didn't have a guitar out. Like it wasn't hanging on the wall at all. It was in a case in a closet. And we didn't speak about it.
I'm pretty sure this room was our goat room.
Yeah, this was a room that was pink and we were raising baby goats in it.
Very different.
So when you guys came. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, one thing I find so interesting about the gigging musician thing is it's different for everyone. Like there's no universal thing of saying, oh, it's like this and this is what you can expect. Yeah. I know, like, there's kind of general rules or whatever you can expect, but like the kinds of gigs people play, the money that people make from different gigs, like it's just
there's a really big spectrum.
Yeah,
because I'm used to the $200 bar gigs and I had to play half of them covers to get that. So what is your experience? You're like,
exactly. Yeah. And so my thing is I really love playing more like jazz artistic music, playing at jazz clubs and things like that. But the reality is like, most of those gigs pay like $100 in New York City. So obviously that's not enough money to live off of. So there are many absolutely incredible jazz musicians here who do that, play gigs like that every night of the week, and they live with roommates and they live that kind of lifestyle, you know, and they're very happy doing it. For me, I don't want to live like that. So I have other gigs that I'm doing a little more so than the artistic thing, just so I can make more money. And
yeah, we have a fat cat to support.
Yeah, so. We literally have a fat cat.
She's been screaming at the
door. We can hear her in the background. Have you? She's ready for her fifth dinner of the day, and it's like 9 a.m. right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we have one of those too. We have three of those and one. Yeah.
We get it.
Well, it's interesting though, because you are able to passion and pivot, right? You know, and we all kind of make considerations to do our art, and we're all used to working with a gun to our head and all that kind of stuff, right? In a perfect world, things would just be different, but that's not the world we live in. But what I think is still so beautiful and respect the shit out of is that you guys navigate this thing, and not only as independent artists, but also together. And it's just a really cool, beautiful, rare thing to see. So just to spotlight it here for everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just keep going, you know? So you're like, fuck yeah, we're crushing it. I know it. So have you guys thought of, do you two do anything together musically? I know you're very different and you've all said that, but have you bridged the gap?
We've played maybe like 3 gigs together ever, 4 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting too.
Yeah. They've all been times where, sometimes touring bands will pick up local musicians to play with them. So it's been in those types of situations, where they just hire like a small orchestra to play behind them. But other than that, our gigs are very separate. Like for wedding gigs, usually for weddings, a string quartet is hired to play ceremony and maybe the cocktail hour, but not that often. And then Stuart usually plays wedding gigs with the band that is doing the dinner and the dance set. So even at wedding gigs, our instruments are separate, like pretty separate most of the time. Yeah. So there's just not that much overlap. Plus, he does a lot of jazz stuff, and I don't do any jazz. And I don't really see that many violins in jazz either. They do exist, but they're not in big bands. Yeah. So, yeah, there's not that much.
Maybe we should create our own little project.
We could create a mariachi. There's a
violin. Are we playing a seed? Yay! Yeah! Let me know if you need some guitar track.
That'd be so cute.
So cool. Yeah.
To do it. I don't speak any Spanish.
That's okay. You can call it the mariachi and really just pronounce
mariachi.
It. Yeah. Mariachi.
Hello, everyone.
Just bastardize the whole thing. You know, just go for it. Very cool. And there's that Metalachi band. Have you ever heard of them?
No. They
do metal covers of like Metallica and stuff like this, but they're a mariachi band.
Oh, I think I've heard something about, I've heard like a recording, but I didn't know they're called metal.
Isn't that brilliant though? I love that. It's brilliant because you're talking cat gut string, freaking nothing else matters. You know, it's so cool. I was like, what? There's just some amazing integrations with music and stuff now. So what is one of your least favorite, if you have one, combos of music? Because I think Rapid Country have been doing stuff for a while. What do you guys think? Just, it's kind of a, I'll ask it this way. In Jurassic Park, the guy says, you know, just because you can, you didn't stop to think if you should, right? And there may be a little bit of that going on around here. Have you guys noticed any?
I'm afraid to say my opinion on something in the sense of like, it's just because I haven't like studied.
You're
it.
Allowed to appreciate the way you feel about something, knowing nothing else about it. We'll give you that consideration. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you going to say?
Well, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like.
There's been some interesting blends. Like they'll take an old classic rock song, remix it with string quartet stuff.
I do know.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I don't care who hears this, but.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
The number one song on the, because I mentioned that I try to keep up with like the top 100 songs. The number one song was that new song by, I think, Shaboozey, that was a remake of 50 Cent's In the Club, but it was like a country version. And I'm not hating on Shaboozey, but I just wish that they wouldn't like
do
remake.
That.
I don't know. It's like a classic song, you know, from my high school time. And now it's in a country version. It just like.
Yeah. This is a message to Shaboozey.
Yeah, it's just direct.
I'm not even saying that it's a bad song, actually. I'm saying that I'm very surprised that it was the number one song. Like, there's this more creative songs out there that should be the number one song.
Oh, for sure.
This is... you're going to get me into a deep rabbit hole here about the regurgitated content. We've been seeing it in music. We've been seeing it in all things. But in movies, feel that it's a deeper reason to motivate us real creators in the realm to actually create. This is why I pay zero attention to it. It's a list of 100 songs I will intentionally avoid, honestly, because they've got a metric on it. And like I said, with frequency theorists, one of the cool elements to that is we do have a Spotify playlist going, and every single participant who's mostly musicians, like 90% musicians, but it's not a requirement because we're not isolating, right? Frequency means everything. So we do have a playlist that every single person that comes on, we sit there like for two and a half, three hours after the show's recorded, and we play music and we swap stuff because that's what it's really about. It's about the community of musicians that loves music. And one of the coolest things is finding new music and not discovering in a list of songs that just, I look at that list and think all of it smells like Axe body spray and I just want nothing to do with it. And I, you know, cause it's all bot, it's Lushy, it's, there's a lot of things in that. Now I'm going to pull up some things as far as some weird shit going on with music and what they're doing with it, with the kids in live performances and things like this, with people like waves of energy going over crowds and knocking them over. Have you seen stuff like this? Or the Travis Scott concerts where people were dying and demons flying through the crowd?
No.
Wait, what was this?
Yeah.
There was like a Lana Del Rey concert.
The Lana Del Rey in Mexico.
Or was it Lana, or was it Taylor Swift or something?
It was Lana Del Rey in Mexico. Yeah, I'm going to pull that up. Yeah. So we're going to pull like this up as videos in the afterthought, and we'll talk about some stuff like that. This is what the afterthought's for, is fucking shit like that where you guys are going to go, what the hell? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Just noting it here. All right. where was I on this? We were going on something.
Talking about music today.
You're like amazing.
Top 100.
So yeah, so we share a playlist. So we all get to add new music to this. We're finding new music constantly. But what I also find is that it's a lot of people like the old shit. You know, we're into classic stuff. I've got a whole funky woo-woo playlist that's just all funk. Man. I'm a sucker for funk. Like all that real big band instrument, but with some groove and with some attitude, you know? So this is the other question I've got for you guys with this and modern music and all of this. It seems that there's tons of freedom and self-expression and self-writing music and things like this. But you guys play with sheets of music in front of you often. How do you feel it compares playing something that you're scripted to play versus something you improv or get to decide on your own?
I'm not a great improver, so I prefer having sheet music in front of me. I mean, it's something that I would like to get better at, and I have had to do more over the past few years. I'd rather have the music in front of me. But also, I'm not super uncomfortable not having music in front of me if I'm just sort of playing along. Like, if I'm playing with a DJ, then it's not a problem. But if it was a situation where... like what Stuart does a lot, where all of a sudden it's just you and it's like you're solo, I would probably freak out a little bit.
You want that tight. You want that tight. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great answer to the question. My grandmother could not play without a sheet of music, and I can't read music to save my life. I'm self-taught, but I learned on the same piano, right? And so same thing, but she would jazz it up, as she said. She'd be like, my mama always got mad at me because I'd be in church playing the piano and I would just jazz it up. And she got so mad at me. And she'd be like, but I don't care. I like it better that way. I'm like, oh my God, grandma, you're raunchy.
Rebel. Anyway,
yeah, you rebel, grandma. But what a beautiful answer. And there's nothing like, there's 0% wrong with that because everybody needs to be able to sit there and be comfortable with what they're doing. But then within that structure, do you find that you're inspired to sort of go, you know, I would have maybe added a little here. I would have changed this note to that, or I could have kept that progression going instead of wrapping it back around. Something like that. Does that ever cross your mind?
Well, with having the music in front of you, it doesn't mean that you're going to play it in the same way musically every time. But I mean, I wouldn't change notes or rhythms to a piece that a composer has written that I'm performing. But there are, I'm trying to think of how to explain this. There are just a lot of different situations. Like in an orchestra, you're following what the conductor says to do musically, but even in that circumstance, all orchestras are going to play pieces a little bit differently from each other because the conductor, has a different thought in mind for how the piece should be shaped and how it should go. But that's something that you would notice more if you're just listening to that over and over than different small nuances. if I'm playing like in a wedding quartet and I'm reading sheet music, and it's usually like pop stuff, but the classical stuff too, everyone plays it a little bit differently, even though it's the same music and the same notes and the same rhythm and the same dynamics written. Depending on who's playing it, it's going to sound a little different. I don't know how else to explain.
Yeah, you've got it. But yeah, there's a lot of
freedom within the notes, because you still have to come up with your own interpretation of how it's going to sound. Otherwise, it will just sound like robotic and emotionless if you're just playing what's on the page. So everyone has to bring their own ideas to it while sticking with what's written. Because if you veer from that and you're playing in a group, it can mess the group up because they're listening to your part also to fit their part in with your part. So it's a lot of like weaving in and out, listening to each other. You also have to listen to the musical ideas of the other people you're playing with, especially in a quartet, because you're trying to all have a cohesive sound together. And oh my gosh, can you hear the cat? I gotta open the door.
You're Godzilla trying to get inside. I don't know. Really. Yeah, he's welcome to join. This is a pet friendly show, by the way. If you want him to join, you turn the piano on behind you and let him walk on it as we're hanging out.
She would sabotage this whole show.
Yeah, I separated her even more. So yeah. She can scream, but we won't hear.
You're in the trumpet closet. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all soundproofed. Yeah. Well, what a beautiful answer, because you nailed it with this, because that's another, you know, sort of thing I was thinking about. This is a lot of music digitally created with backing tracks and all this, you know, DJ stuff. It's all they cut and paste. I mean, down to the hairline microsecond of when that snare should be there, when that chain should be there. It does lose this nuance, this flux. But you listen to old school, John Bonham wasn't on time every time. Jimmy Page did not hit everything exactly right. You can hear some off stuff. There's feel to it. There's groove. And that's what's so important. But you explained it perfectly. How do you take the roboticness out of reading a piece of music? You nailed it.
Yes.
Beautiful. Yeah. Stuart, what do you think about all that?
Wait, what was the topic again?
So
I have a question. So do you mean like, say you're learning a song, but you can't read music, so you're learning it from however you would learn the song without just like knowing the fingerings or blah, like, oh, this is a G chord, blah, 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 blah. Is that what you mean? Or do you mean literally just like there's no music, you're just doing, making it up?
Both. So how I taught myself how to play was on an electric guitar with no amp, with my radio, my little boombox. Remember a little boombox with a cassette player inside of it? That's where I have my Jurassic Park songs that I played. The whole thing. I still have it. I showed it to her. It's a cassette tape. So I would take this, and my parents didn't like the kind of music I liked, right? Good music. And so the very Christian upbringing. So I would take my little boombox, plug it into the closest socket to the closet, run it inside the closet, turn it down as low as I could with my electric guitar. I kept it in tune all the time because I knew that was important. If it sounded like it did on the radio, then I had a better shot at figuring it out. And what I would do is I would hear a song, I would drop everything I was doing, coloring or some shit, run in my closet, shut the door, and figure it out as fast as I could. Listen to what I heard and emulate it. And that's how I taught myself. And so through that, I created a very, you know, stylistic, specialized style. It's my style, right? And so therefore the kind of music I write is all also based on considerations I made while attempting to do what other people did when they were playing music. So I didn't watch people and do it. It was all my ear that trained me how to play. And then I just started writing my own music.
That's awesome. And that's actually very similar to a jazz musician's upbringing too. So jazz music is very aural. So basically the best way to learn that music is, say, like Miles Davis plays a solo, then to literally transcribe it. And I prefer transcribing it where you don't write any of the notes down. You're just learning the solo note by note, being able to play it on your horn. So there's no music or anything. You just have your eyes closed and you're like trying to sound as close to Miles as you can. And so my favorite way of playing is exactly like what we're talking about, like no music. I love playing jazz standards gigs where it's just like, okay, let's play this tune, and everyone has it memorized, or everyone knows it and has played it so many times that it's just like kind of like speaking English, you know, you're just like doing the thing. And when you're playing in situations like that, and also where it's like a more improvisatory thing, where it's like you can add things here and there and everyone's listening to each other, you can go to some really, really cool places that you wouldn't be able to go to if it were all scripted out. So, of course, there's a lot of merit to like when there's so many things orchestrated. What is that word? Orchestrated?
Orchestral?
Orchestrated out. Yeah. Like, but I just really like when it's all kind of on the go, feels like a more like just following your ear and also how you feel in that moment. And you can just let that guide you.
Yeah.
Nailed
That's
it.
Cool.
Absolutely nailed it. Yes. And this is what writing music's all about. I felt like shit. So I wrote a song that made me feel better about feeling like shit. And it's like, yeah. You know, country's got this model down,
yeah,
right? The chick left, the truck got stolen, but it ran over your dog on the way out, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, fuck my life, right? And so the feeling and the emotion is what drives music, right? I mean, that's emotive. It's beautiful. And we look at frequency all around us, guys. This whole realm is littered with frequency and it's beautiful. I want to ask you guys what you think about, you know, modern music versus classical. I know that you said that you do. I like that you kind of made it sound like you force yourself to listen to that, which again, it does feel like that if you do that, because it's like, oh, I don't want to because it's so, but what do you guys feel about modern stuff versus more traditional classicals type thing? And you can go as far back as Bach if you'd like. I mean, or, you know, 70s, 60s, again, that funk era, something like that. Like, what's your sort of favorite era of music?
I like Baroque music.
So I kind of want to go on a little rant here. I feel like we are living in a crazy golden era of music, but a lot of us don't realize it because the artists that, I mean, kind of generalizing here, but a lot of the artists that are getting like the number one spot are, it's more about making money than it is about music. But there are so many incredible artists out there making incredible music.
Yeah.
I feel like in a couple of decades or whatever, we'll look back and be able to have a better realization on that.
You are part of the wave that's a part of this, and you've nailed it with this, dude. We do not unempathize at all. I've never heard anything more true, brother. Yeah. There was a wonderful saying from a manager at Guitar Center. I managed a Guitar Center in Houston a long time ago, and the general manager told me one time, because I was so key on being a big musician, right? Being a famous musician and all that. And he pulled me in the office and told me this, and I'll never forget it. He said, you know all the greatest musicians you've never heard of? And I go, he goes, you know how many of the greatest musicians you've never heard of? And I go, how many? And he goes, all of them. Because the ones you hear out there are shit, or they got lucky. They sucked the right dick, or they got a picture with somebody that they could get incriminated over. And so they owe somebody. But like the story he wove about the industry, I was just like, what the fuck? But then if you really think about it, in these bars for $200 or for $100 a night, that's where you find this shit. And that's where you'd find your Stevie Ray Vaughans and things like this, man. And those with the people out there in the emotion, in the swell of it. So yeah, man, it takes a lot of heart and it bastardizes things when you get it to an 808 and everything's to this straight click and nothing is humanized. And even the vocals now process to shit to where all of it sounds robotic and formulaic. It's mind numbing and it's soul sucking. And I don't disagree with you, Stuart.
Yeah.
And it's going away, Bubba.
Yeah. Another thing too, that's interesting is like, for a lot of like the top 100 songs, like, when they write a song like that, usually it'll be with like a panel of 12 people where it's all about
GPT.
it's like, what is going to sell the most, you know? It's not even about like what is pure, genuine music. It's more about like, how do we get 10 billion listeners to check out the song, you know? And, so at what point is it like, now you're just making music for money and it has nothing to do with actual. Well,
and life. Also they're making music like for TikTok too. Like,
yeah.
They make
yeah.
pop songs now. Yeah. They want to make something that's for people with really, really short attention spans.
Exactly.
Music kind of like repeat the button, goes fast and has like one hook that can be used on TikTok.
Yep. That's all that's focused on now, it feels like.
But you know, that coning into that experience though, because it's so substanceless. Like there's nothing there. There's no dissonance. There's no time to be taken on a ride, right? There's no time to enjoy something, be taken into a dissonant time or a downbeat where you're like, why did they go here? And you're like, oh, it's for this next chorus. It's even better. It's like this ride that you get to get taken on, man. It's an emotional roller coaster, right? And so it's important not to miss that nuance and just do a hook, clickbaity, quick, repetitive thing.
Remember we saw, there was something that we saw on an Instagram post, and it was talking about how much music changed in a key.
Yes.
And how that is like vastly dropped. Like people don't change keys, and how like that brings so much to music.
Yep.
And now they just don't, they're not doing that anymore. It's literally about the hook. It's literally just about putting out shit music.
They did this with color tones as well. They've been muting color tones in reality to kind of blur us all back to this. It's really interesting when you see this dulling, this literal dimming and dulling of light around here. But again, I think this is on purpose. This is the mud in which the lotus flowers grow out of, right? I think we are here to create this next wave of whatever. And that's why we look around and see all of it shit. We're not here to bow down to it anymore. We're here to go, hey, that's shit. I made this. If you like this, you could listen to it too. Because like you said, Stuart, it's never been a cooler time because we can track this in our house right now with Pro Tools or Ableton or whatever. And I've got the same, you know, industry standard as anybody else out there. You just got to get in front of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A very uncompetitive time, I feel, really, because all the competition sucks ass. So it's it's like, what do you like, the douche or the shit sandwich? Which one do you want? Like, what's Stuart doing these days? I'm like, there you go. Now we're talking.
Well, so I kind of want to argue with you on that one, because I feel like there are so many bands out there who are doing the thing or incredible, who like... maybe everyone in this on this call hasn't heard of, but they're doing the thing, you know. And I think about like Austin, Texas, like all of the amazing musicians and bands coming out of there, or like New York, all of the different things that are happening here. Thinking about bands like do you know Hiatus Coyote?
No, but they're getting written down. See, this is what I love, is finding new music. Yes, and there's tons of music coming up right now, but it's not Taylor Swift.
Yeah, so they're like, they've been around for maybe, or I guess I've known about them for like 12 years. And they're just like, what genre would you say Hiatus Coyote is? Like rock fusion? I don't even know how to describe the...
I don't know. No. I just say indie when I don't know.
Okay, yeah. So what, basically a band where it's like really fresh, incredible music that still has a lot of strong roots in like R&B. But I mean, they're like well known, but not like Taylor Swift well known, you know. And I think of bands like that that are just like blowing my mind with just being so creative with everything they're doing, but they're not like mainstream, you know. I just feel like there's so many bands like that that are really pushing the music forward in a positive way, but a lot of us just aren't aware of that.
Dude, you nailed it. The openers of the big acts are the ones that I'm talking about. This is the thing. This is that new wave. When you go and you prefer an opener to the fucking headlining thing that you paid way too much money to come see, that's awesome. That's what I'm talking about. Because you have like your Peripheries, or, I mean, God, so many bands. And when I was back in Houston, I used to listen to the underground hip hop scene out there, and it was just incredible, man. Like there's some incredible music right there boiling under the surface. And that's what I love about it. It's right there. It's accessible. Porcupine Tree is another one of these, you know, amazing bands. Have you ever heard of them?
Wait, who's this?
Porcupine Tree out of the UK.
No, I've never heard of them.
I am going to send you some stuff, dude. We're going to do some music swap. I will.
Really good.
I love it. And I completely agree with your sentiment, my friend.
Awesome.
Okay, Channing, I want to know if you have discovered yet that the entire orchestra is out of key except for you.
If that would happen, then no, that wouldn't happen.
I ask because you play a fretless instrument and you have the ability to find actual pitch and nuance. And in between frets on a guitar, for instance, there are about 12 intervals at least that are in between all of that. Now, fretless instruments like celloists and violinists, upright bass players, things like this, I had a guy named James Sanger, and he is a real famous producer in the UK. He worked with Phil Collins and all kinds of people. He said that because he developed something, or he was adamant in discovering something called the Lucy scale, which we'll also talk about in the back end because that's just cool as shit.
Yeah.
And he has the first left-handed Lucy scale guitar ever created, which is also fascinating because the frets are different. There's 25 frets and they're closer, and some the intervals are at different ratios. So it gives this like really interesting sound. And what's fascinating too is he worked on whale communication and animal songs, and he found that all animal communication is in this Lucy scale. So my question is he mentioned on there that violinists, cellos, and fretless stringed instruments such as yourself complain about the orchestra being out of tune because you have perfect intonation on there. So have you discovered this?
I think that this is more of a problem maybe for people who have perfect pitch, and I do not have perfect pitch. I have relative pitch, which is just when you can hear the pitches, but you're not hearing a pitch and you're like tweaking it in your own brain to fit the exact like 440A or something like that. So pianos are like well-tempered, so they're not all exactly like to the cent on the note. And I have heard that that can be annoying for people with perfect pitch, like string players who are trying to match a piano. They'll have to play through a little bit. But when you're getting like to that level, like if you have perfect pitch, you can still adjust, but you can tell that you're adjusting. And if you don't have perfect pitch like me, I'm just either assuming that I'm out of tune all the time and I'm wrong, or I'm just trying to adjust naturally from what I'm hearing. Kind of like when I have played with a DJ who was not playing in any key.
Right, the opposite.
Figuring out where the notes were again. But it also makes it easy because we don't have frets and we can adjust really fast. Like if you put your finger down, you'll hear like a microsecond before the sound goes out. If it's wrong, you just move your finger a little bit, and then over time from practicing and playing over and over again, it's just something that you automatically do and you don't think about. Playing in a larger group like an orchestra, you all tune to the same A, so you're all starting from the same bass, and then you just get used to listening to everyone around you and matching everyone, and it just becomes like a natural thing to do. If you're playing like a straight up wrong note, then that's going to be really obvious, but that's you just playing like a wrong note, you know?
Gotcha. It's a picky pitch. Okay. So someone with picky pitch is that way. I see. Very cool.
One time I had a lesson in college that my lessons were supposed to be an hour, but this one was 2 hours long, just because it's up to your teacher how long your lessons are. So they can just hold you over if they want.
Until you get it. Yep.
Yeah. But this lesson I'll never forget because it was so intense. It was 2 hours. We were going over one line of an etude, which is like an exercise. And every single note I played, my teacher would be like, "That's too sharp. That's too flat." And every note took so long for me to get perfectly in tune. And it really made me pay really deep attention to intonation after that. She also had me just be silent for 30 seconds. And when the 30 seconds was up, she asked me to name every single sound that I heard. So I was like, I heard the air conditioning. I heard the clock ticking. I heard someone walk by in the hallway. And she was like, "You missed one." Oh no.
Like, I totally ripped ass over there and you didn't say it. I was just being nice. You're like, "You fail." It's part of the test. Did that give you an etude? Playing that etude, you know?
Yeah. She said that I missed a car driving by the window, but we were on the third floor. I couldn't hear that far out. She had really, really good ears.
Apparently.
It's like Daredevil.
But it was really intense lesson, and yeah, I'll never forget that.
Do you find yourself doing this? And you'll be like, "Stuart, we just heard seven sounds. What the fuck were they?"
Well, now with the type of gigs that I play, I'm not as picky with my intonation, but I can be if I need to be. But it does take me a little bit to sort of lock into that. Like if I'm recording something and it needs to be really in tune, then I have to kind of access a different part of my brain and just like really laser focus on all of the sounds and the distance between the pitches and try to make sure that they're all as perfect as I can get them. But if I'm just playing a random gig, then I'm just kind of playing and it's in tune, but it's maybe not exactly like to the cent perfectly in tune, but no one can tell, because when you're getting to this point, it's like, I don't know. I'm not like someone who's like soloing with orchestras and things like that. So no one is really paying attention so much to my individual playing. But when you get to that level, then you do have to be more picky. So in all, it just depends on what you're playing, what your level is, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Beautifully said. I also picture, as you're describing this, you know, the type of environment where some of these gigs can be found. Alcohol's probably served there. And by about the fourth set or so, those people are also requesting a mic to do karaoke. And I just picked up some honky-tonk gig as a cook in a honky-tonk for a few nights a week. It's totally random, dude. But they do have karaoke night, and there's a lot of notes being hit by those people. few of them are found in the song that they're attempting to. So to hear you describe music the way you do, and then you're sitting there playing to these dudes just like slamming Coors Lights in the corner going like, Freebird! You know, it's just, it's awesome. The reverence of music that we get to, you know, bring to people whenever you're playing. You're just shining your light wherever you go. And it's just really cool, conscientious practice that I just felt that you should here, because that was awesome. Way to go. Stuart, let's talk about your Grammy, and then let's get to the afterthought, dude. What's that like? Do you eat like popcorn out of it and stuff? Like, do you take it everywhere? Do you put it on your, do you mount it to the hood of your car?
So it, just to put it all out there. So it was my friend, Dan Pugach. It was his big band record, and he's the one who won the Grammy for that album. I think it's cool to say I won a Grammy, but I think that
technically everyone that played on it.
That's right. Yeah. You played a note. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing, so like the whole situation is, I like 2 years ago, I went to the studio, did the big band record. Like, I think it was either 1 or 2 days, and then I didn't do any more work for the record.
Yeah, you know what I like? All the work.
Dan was the one who's really in the trenches with it. And also there's so much behind the scenes, things that you have to do to like even get considered, you know, and then all so many things to even like once after you've been nominated to win. So like the amount of work that I've put in is like 1/1000th the amount of work that Dan put in for the record. So I don't, if to me, it would feel weird to be like, oh yeah, I won a Grammy for this record. Because I've just like, the amount of work I put into it was so minuscule compared to what him and his wife, Nicole, did. But the whole process, it's really cool. Like, seeing like, so Dan is this amazing drummer who lives out here, and, he recorded on my debut album, but he's like it's just cool. Like when you see someone who's extremely talented and also insanely hardworking, go for something and make it happen. It's like really inspiring to see that and be like, wait, so I could go for that same thing too if I wanted.
Yep.
Yeah. But it
was really fun being there though.
It was awesome. And I was talking to a couple of friends who'd were sidemen like me and who had won in that same category in previous years. And they were saying that the band leader just went to the Grammys with like the producer. So it was really cool of Dan to even like invite us and then also bring us on stage, because he could have very well been like, this is mine, my own, you know, and it's just him on stage. But it's just the fact that he like brought everyone up on stage was so cool of him, basically. Yeah.
They were up against really, really great musicians also.
Yeah.
So it was really, really exciting to when they announced the win.
Yeah,
I think everyone was not super expecting it, since it was the first time that the big band had been up for it.
But, yeah, yeah.
That was the first big band award category ever?
No. This was the first time this big band has been nominated. Yeah. But the other musicians were more like well known in the
kind of established types.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. This is really what we're talking about, Stuart. This is that bubble under the boop. Here we are. Hi. Remember, you don't know us yet, but now you do. I love it. And of course he brought you all on stage because it's classy, man. It shows that you worked with the right guy. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it was also like just the attending the whole, both of the ceremonies was so interesting too. And it kind of like, so they have two ceremonies. One is where they hand out maybe like 90% of the Grammy Awards. And that's the one that most people don't watch. And they have the one in the evening, and that's where like all the Beyoncé's or Kendrick Lamar's are actually attending. And to me, it was kind of annoying seeing that like it was like the same like five artists who were getting nominated for everything and winning everything. It's like there's a lot of incredible artists out there. Like why is it just like, I mean, nothing against like Kendrick Lamar or Beyoncé, but just feel like there's a big pool of musicians to come to pull the big group of musicians to pull from. Yeah.
Do you know how many great musicians there that you've never heard of?
Yeah,
all
exactly.
of them. Fucking
yeah.
all of them.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
You're Dude, very humble, but
you are.
Congratulations.
And you
played a part in it.
You played on it in it. And your energy, man, I think this has a lot to do with energy. And so there's sort of a combined element, this chemistry there that made everything perfect. And by him inviting all of you up, it just sealed the deal on
really cool.
the whole energetic, I guess, cauldron of everything that came together. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
What do you guys say that we go to our afterthought here? But we've got one more question for you before we wrap. Just want to remind everybody that all the ways to find them are located down in the show description, the Instagram, the Discord. Can we talk about your Discord before we get into that?
Yeah.
Do you want folks to hop on that? Is that an invite?
It is. I mean, this is very much it's a jazz trumpet thing. So if that's your thing, then
if you play jazz trumpet, then
there's like two dudes out there that have been listening to the show forever. That's sort of like, oh my God, it's now my is my time. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But it's that, it's nothing else. I don't want someone who's like a guitarist to join and be like, what is this?
I can't relate. Yeah.
So I think that we live in such a cool time with the internet and technology and like figuring out different ways of doing the thing, whether it be teaching or playing or whatever. And so this Discord, it's basically an online community that I'm creating, where I'm basically sharing a lot of different educational, like jazz trumpety kind of things. Like, here's a transcription you could learn, or here's a pattern I wrote out that you can practice in all 12 keys, or here's a jazz etude, things like that. And then we're also having weekly discussions and monthly video calls covering various topics. But so far we're at 40 members, so it's we were just about coming on the 2 month mark of being open to the public. So,
yeah. And it is a paid group. It's 10 a month right now. And the idea is to eventually raise it a bit. But Stuart teaches a lot, but he can't teach as much as he might want to because of time. So we were trying to think of a way where he could, still teach people who want lessons from him, but in a way that doesn't take as much time from his schedule. So that's kind of why we thought together about creating this Discord, so that he's still paid some for his work, because he does put a lot of work into this. He writes out etudes that he makes up totally himself every week and all kinds of things. Like, he's always like writing out stuff. So it's not stuff that people can get anywhere else, because it's literally stuff that he's writing. And it's things that he is showing to his own students, his regular students. So it's a really good opportunity for people who maybe aren't in a place to pay for regular lessons, or just kind of want to add a little bit on the side. There are a lot of different reasons that people are in the group. Some people are classical trumpeters who are just kind of curious about jazz. Some are trumpeters who haven't played in a while and they're kind of picking it back up. Some are like college jazz students. So it just depends on, but it's really good. I'm excited about it and I'm in it, but I don't play trumpet.
You're the one non-trumpet member.
Yeah. And Channing's been really helpful just with like, oh, we could do this. And then also being like, have you done this yet? Like really helped being on my butt for deadlines and stuff, which has been really, really great. So it's kind of it's more of a co-led kind of thing.
Yeah. Because I think it's a really good idea and I want it to work.
Yeah. I want it to happen.
Yeah.
Really cool.
It's hard thinking about ways to like reach the people who would benefit from it. Even though Stuart is pretty active on Instagram, which is something that I'm not super active on, he does a really good job with that, like posting trumpet videos really frequently. But it's still hard to figure out how to reach people because, again, like we don't learn about this in music school, business stuff.
No, this is that.
Figuring it out on our own.
Yeah, this is that thing they don't tell you when you start a podcast, that you also need to be a graphic designer to make thumbnails. And you're like, oh, okay, great. That's because I just wanted to talk to people on a mic. And they're like, yeah, you can do all this other shit too. No, it's beautiful and awesome. And what a great opportunity for people, even. So would you recommend that if somebody's out here listening going, you know, this is my push. I have the Jurassic Park soundtrack. Trumpets are my thing. And I want to learn from this guy. So Stuart, would you offer lessons, or would this be where you would recommend that people start?
Yeah, this is where I would recommend that I start. My teaching schedule is full. So this is like for students who, so this
more
would
of an
be,
evergreen concept where they can come learn at their pace.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was another thing too, is I was always, not always, but there pretty frequently would be start meeting with students who had full-time jobs in music or other fields, and they would just be too busy to make lessons make sense. And yes. So this is also geared for that kind of person where it's like, oh, I have 20 minutes a day to practice. I want to practice this etude, that kind of thing.
And here it is. I can log right on. I can get in and I've already got it. What a cool thing, man. Honestly, it's brilliant. It's the way to go. We all, you know, kind of enjoy this in-person thing, but even like sitting down here today, getting four schedules together and just going, okay, guys, we're going to hang out with this. It's a lot, right? And it's a big ask, and we appreciate it also in return.
Yeah.
But what a cool thing, and it's going to be linked down below, guys, as well as all the ways to find them. So before we get into our afterthought here, let's go ahead and ask. We just like to do this. You guys will get the last word on this. What gets y'all out of bed every single day and keeps you moving forward?
Coffee.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say your cat.
Maybe if she's screaming loud enough.
Right. We have another hour to talk, because I can talk about espresso.
Dude, yes, we do. Yes, we went to Australia. That's all they have in Australia, by the way. They don't have percolators. Everything's espresso. Wow. You go through McDonald's, you're driving through the wrong side, you look inside, rows of like high dollar espresso machines. They just, is espresso. Yeah. Go to Australia, you'd love it. We'll go, come with us next time, dude. Anyway, so yes, we'll talk espresso in the afterthought. Other than that, we'll get you up. Any kind of motivating, like I play trumpet and it's pretty cool.
I just really like making good coffee.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.